618, or I'm sorry, 418. Present, we have Senators Stedman and Giesel and myself, Chair Dyson. We are going to take up SB 90, and we'll take all the public testimony. I suspect we're not going to get through all of our business. If we have a quorum, we'll vote on it. We'll take all the public testimony, and as long as we have a quorum, we will keep processing the all of our business. If we lose a quorum, then we will wait till 6 o'clock and reconvene when the people from LBNA. But I want to get the public testimony in on. I think many of you are here on a specific bill, so you don't get inconvenienced. But I have very little sympathy for my committee members being inconvenienced. All right, Senator Dunleavy.
Excuse me. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Dunleavy, Senator Mike Dunleavy. I represent District D in the Valley. And we're introducing Senate Bill 90, School District Health Insurance. And I'll be brief on the sponsor statement, then I'll answer any questions. As you know, the cost of health insurance for all employees has escalated far greater than the rate of inflation. And Alaska's 53 school districts have felt the financial pinch. I want us to remember this, 53 separate school districts in the state of Alaska. Under Senate Bill 90, all Alaskan public school district employees will be covered by a state-managed group health insurance program. Approximately 19,000 school district employees and their families, and an estimated total of 47,000 individuals, would be added to the state of Alaska's employee health plan. This larger insurance pool places the state of Alaska in a position to negotiate a more favorable employee health care insurance plan. By moving school districts into an integrated state plan, the state and school districts benefit from the economies of scale. Currently, each school district must obtain its own insurance coverage. Consequently, the level of coverage and the cost of premiums vary widely throughout the state. In addition to the potential savings with lower insurance premiums, two other advantages are afforded school districts and the state through this legislation. Senate Bill 90 will provide a standardized health care coverage statewide for all school district employees. A person who may elect to move between school districts will know the basic insurance coverage offered before the transfer. Secondly, the need for administrative time and effort by each school district to secure and negotiate a health insurance plan for its employees is eliminated. This responsibility shifts to the Department of Administration, a department that routinely manages insurance policies for all state employees and allows districts to focus on educational policy issues. Starting July 1st, 2014, school districts will transition to the new state health plan, health care insurance plan, as each school district's existing employee contracts expire. All school districts are expected to change over to the state of Alaska plan within 3 to 5 years. Through the chair, I'll be very brief. You have 53 school districts. They have to come up with, negotiate their own insurance plan. Some of these school districts are as small as 10 students. And of course, we have large school districts. The largest school districts is Anchorage. Our student population, and quite honestly, the state of Alaska's population is smaller than many cities down south, many city school districts down south, and many county school districts down south, which have negotiated single insurance plans. The state of Alaska has a single retirement system for its teachers and TRS, and one for its public employees, in which some of the other public school employees are in. So we don't have separate retirement systems within each of the 53 school districts. The cost of insurance is rising constantly, and this is an opportunity to pool employees of the school districts into one large pool and negotiate lower and more favorable rates. This pulls back a variable cost issue into the state of Alaska that I think could be managed much better, allowing school districts to focus on policy and educating children. So with that, I'm willing to entertain questions, and we do have folks here from the Department of Administration that can answer specifics.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Who, in general, who are the groups that will oppose this? that you know of?
I would imagine that there may be a school district or two that may not understand what the pooling concept will do and how it could benefit them. And I would imagine if there are organizations such as NEA that have insurance insurance plans within school districts, they may also oppose this move.
Yeah, okay. And is this, if this passes, is it optional, or are they mandated to join?
It would be much like the retirement system. Once it's pulled in this state, over time, the understanding would be that all the school districts would become part of this pool. Because once again, it's to have a standardized coverage, standardized insurance plan, and again, quite frankly, control costs.
So I think you said it's mandatory?
Over time, yes.
Yeah. Over what period of time?
Starting July 1st, 2014, districts will transition into the plan as their plans in the existing school districts expire. So,
all right, and just for us to get an idea of where the administration is on this, what order would you suggest we have administration officials appear before us?
I'd start with the commissioner and whoever else she wishes to bring up to explain the details.
Thank you. Please.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Becky Hultberg, the Commissioner of the Department of Administration. With me, I have Deputy Commissioner Mike Barnhill. I'm going to make some comments about this bill, our department, our role in this. Deputy Commissioner Barnhill, then, if you'd like to discuss the fiscal note, can walk through that, and then we're happy to answer any questions. This is a very complex topic. I'm going to be brief, but please ask me any questions if there's any area you'd like to discuss more. I think this committee is certainly aware, because we spent some significant time in front of you earlier this session talking about the very issue of health care costs and the importance of managing these costs. We appreciate this bill coming forward because it does give us the opportunity, I think, to continue that discussion. I'm not going to belabor the statistics, but we all know that health care costs are probably one of the most significant economic issues for our country. I would argue that health care costs are also one of the more significant economic issues for our state. Our costs as a country are high. Our costs as a state, in comparison to other states, are also high. And it's not even just an issue of high costs, but it's the rate at which they keep growing that I think is the most significant concern. So managing expenses is important. We spend much of our time in the Department of Administration managing state expenses. I think in a time where our resources perhaps are going to be less than they have been in the past, managing expenses becomes even more important. And I think this bill offers us an opportunity to talk about the management of an expense that we have not yet discussed much in this setting, and that is the management of school district insurance costs. So the state currently manages health insurance plans for our active and our retiree population. We cover approximately 6,400 employees in our plan. The balance of our employees are covered by four union health trusts. We also cover retirees. So we inherit the employees of these school districts into our retiree plan. Right now, we have about 60,000 retirees on whose behalf we manage a health plan. The combined annual spend for the active and retiree plans is about $600 million, a big chunk of change for this state. Both of these plans are self-insured. Claims are administered by a third-party administrator who processes the claims, negotiates network discounts on our behalf, and receives a payment on a per-member, per-month basis. So I want to mention a few things that drive costs in a health plan and talk about those in relationship to this legislation. There are a multitude of factors that drive costs, but they include your network discounts, what kind of discounts you can negotiate with your network providers, and how broad that that network is. Your administrative costs, and these are typically on a per-member, per-month basis. They are costs you negotiate with your third-party administrator. Also impacting the cost of your plan is the number of high-cost claimants you have in a year. And this is where scale becomes really important, because if you have five high-cost claimants in a pool of 400 employees, That is of much more significance than if you have five high-cost claimants in a pool that's double, triple, quadruple that size. So scale is important. Medical inflation is obviously an element that drives cost, and then utilization drives cost. And utilization is impacted by many things, including how your plan is designed. So all of these costs in some way are affected by the scale of your plan, the number of people, the number of covered lives that you have in that plan. So currently our Alaska Care employee plan, we're just going to talk in this context about the employee plan because it's the one that would be most, that these new members would come into. Currently it has 16,400 members. That includes the employees plus their dependents. And in its current form, this bill would add an estimated 47,000 members to that plan. So let me talk a little bit about...
Sorry, repeat that number again.
It would add an estimated, Mr. Chairman, 47,000 covered lives to our plan. So theoretically, a larger volume in your plan, more covered lives in your plan, can be advantageous in a couple of ways. One is that larger numbers of members in your pool can be used to achieve deeper discounts with your providers. If you're bringing more volume to the table, your negotiating power is better. And it also can impact your per member per month administrative costs. If you bring larger scale to the table, your third-party administrator is more likely to negotiate a better per member per month rate. Larger pools can also reduce risk, which we talked about. I talked a little bit about earlier regarding your number of high-cost claimants, as those costs then can get spread across a larger number of members. And larger volume can also positively impact your per-unit costs for services. That includes the kinds of services that you can offer within your health plan to manage costs, like chronic disease management, other services that are easier to acquire and manage with a larger volume. And then also I think it's important to consider that the state is inheriting these employees into the retiree plan. So ultimately we have a very vested interest in these costs in two ways. The first is that because the state provides so much funding or provides funding for education, we have a vested interest in these costs directly this year, next year. But we also have a vested interest long term in the health of this population of individuals, because as they retire, they are going to come into our retiree plan, and at that point we are directly responsible for paying those claims. So we have an interest in how their plans are designed now and in ensuring a healthy population now so that we can manage and mitigate our costs in the future. So I'm going to just wrap up with a few comments and then happy to answer any questions. I think a real key philosophical question that is raised in this bill, and I think it's a good one to discuss, is what's the best approach to managing these costs? Granted that there are pros and cons to this approach, but right now we have a very fragmented approach to how health care is managed for our school districts. We have a fragmented approach in the number of school districts, as Senator Dunleavy had indicated, but we also have a fragmented approach just within individual school districts. I was looking at the Juneau School District, and the Juneau School District alone has four different health plans for different classes of employees. There's wide variation among those four health plans, between those four health plans. So I think we have a fragmentation not just within, not just among our many districts, but sometimes even within the district. So I think one of the questions that is a very valid question that comes up as a result of this bill is, should we be managing costs of this magnitude in a fragmented way or in a more coordinated and integrated approach? And so with that, we look forward to exploring those questions further with you. Deputy Commissioner Barnhill can walk through the fiscal note, or we can be happy to answer any questions you might have.
We'll go to questions first. Are there questions from the committee for the commissioner? Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have any anticipation of how much more a public employee or a teacher would have to pay, or how much less a teacher would pay if this were to pass?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, it's a very good question. It's a very difficult question to answer, though, because it's going to depend on the district, on the plan, and I would also caution us that looking just at out-of-pocket costs is not really a good, not really the best measure of the value of a plan. Really, if you're going to compare plans,
Commissioner, you may talk slightly over.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you cautioned me about this before, so. The best, through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, it's important to look on an apples-to-apples basis if you're comparing between plans. And sometimes the coverage is different. And so if you're just looking at what the cost of the plan is and you're not taking into consideration the coverage of the plan, sometimes the information can be a bit misleading. So without looking at an actual actuarial value of the plan, that is a difficult question to answer. I can tell you that with some plans that I've seen, there appears to be significant savings for the district by moving to our plan. But I think with 53 districts and with some of those districts having 3 and 4 plans, that's going to be a difficult question to answer definitively.
Answer. Follow up.
Thank you. I have a letter from Local 71. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to look at that. It was sent to the committee through Senator Dyson. And they ran some rough numbers, and what their estimation is that in Anchorage, the Anchorage School District, if this were to have passed, would have paid an additional $400,000, and each employee who needed the full family plan would have paid an additional over $1,000 for the year. Is that sort of mesh with your understanding?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I saw the letter, and again, I think without doing an actuarial evaluation of that plan in comparison to ours, it's difficult to make an assessment about the better value. We've just recently looked at the issue of whether or asked the question about whether our Union Health Trust had an EAP program, employee assistance program, which is counseling that's available to employees. And in fact, this particular plan did not. Our plan does offer EAP services. So that's just an example of where you may you have to look not just at the absolute cost, but also at what is covered within that cost.
Mr. Chair.
Follow up, Senator Wilkowski.
And as someone who represents Anchorage, I would have a very difficult time going back to my constituents and saying I voted for a bill that was going to cost the school district $400,000 more, was going to cost families $1,000 more, when I'm not hearing complaints from people about the trust that's being administered already. I'd have a hard time doing that.
And through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I think to evaluate the impact on Anchorage, you would really need to look at what other plans they have within the district, what the costs of those plans and the relative coverage of those plans were, and if those plans were going to, if a transition would save the district money because of that, when you look at that in total. That plan is not the plan that covers the teachers, which is going to be the bulk of the cost in the Anchorage School District. So without speaking specifically, I don't have the Anchorage School District data, nor I think would I be the best person to comment on the Anchorage School District data. But I think you have it's going to be very easy in the context of this bill to look at very specific examples. I think there are going to be, in some cases, situations where one district may pay more, but on the other hand, you may have districts that pay significantly less. You're going to have this bill is going to have to be looked at in total, and that's why when you look at the enterprise level costs and how to manage those costs, that's the information I think we can bring to you.
Just to interrupt for a moment, do we have the benefit of the experience of other jurisdictions that have done similar things? Any historical data on that?
Mr. Chair, Mike Barnhill, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Administration. We're aware that there are other jurisdictions, the state of Indiana, for instance, that have made their state active employee health pool open to school districts, but we don't have the information on the experience of that yet.
Senator Wilikowski to continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Should this bill pass and the state become the sponsor here, would you have to allow vendors to compete through the state procurement process?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, at this point, our plan is subject to the state procurement process. I think we can be transparent in saying that it is very difficult at this time to manage the RFP currently that is out on the street for a third-party administrator, under the state procurement code has been a very difficult process to manage. But as of right now, that we are subject to the state procurement code.
I think she said yes.
Can I ask a question on that point?
Yeah. Senator
Coghill. Under the third-party administration that we do right now, if this goes through, that will fit within the agreements you have presently?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, we would likely go back. We have not completed that RFP process yet, and if this bill passed, we would likely go back. But we are with additional information about the pool. But we have not, we have discussed that idea, but we have not made a decision.
And am I right that did this concept and impetus at this time originate with the administration or with Senator Dunleavy?
Mr. Chairman, this was brought to us, and we're happy to explore the concept. We were happy to explore the concept.
Oh, I heard it.
Yeah.
I'm looking for you to say, yes, we're in favor of it.
Mr. Chairman, we are not taking an official position on the bill, but we are here to express our support for the concept of insurance pooling and to talk about the advantages that we believe can occur through insurance pooling.
Is there a time factor? If this is the right trail to go down, is getting you all started on it now, there's some significant advantage to doing that?
Mr. Chair, the bill contemplates that the first folks would come in July 1, 2014, so it gives the administration a year to get ready. And then the bill also contemplates that folks would come in over a two-year period, so we'd hope that there would be some migration that would be phased.
Yeah, but that misses my question. Is sooner better than later? Is getting started sooner and then getting everybody on board, you know, 5 years from now or something, is there an advantage? I suspect we ought to be after better protection at the most effective cost.
Mr. Chair, the time frames set forth in the bill are workable. We couldn't do it any sooner than the bill contemplates. For instance, we could not absorb 47,000 covered lives on July 1, 2013, but we can start to absorb them on July 1, 2014.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just can't help but be a little bit baffled, I guess, by the idea that you are sitting here supporting a massive state government takeover of the insurance industry, where you currently have the private sector managing. You are now saying the state of Alaska can do a better job. We want a massive state takeover of the insurance industry. I'm just a little bit baffled by that. I suspect if I were to sponsor a bill like that, I know what people would call it. I know the names I would be called. I'm just a little bit surprised to see the tables turned here.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I didn't really spot a question in that statement, so I don't think I agree with your characterization, but thank you.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Coghill.
You know, it sounds like we're picking up the cost anyway, somewhere along the line. So maybe one of the questions that maybe the administration can answer or some of the districts will get to, but it sounds to me like if we do this, there's an economy of scale and pooling that is an advantage to those who we have in the state employment at this point.
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, that is absolutely the case. The state is paying the majority of these costs to begin with. And I think the real philosophical question here is, with respect to the provision of health insurance, is it better to provide it in a fragmented and uncoordinated way, or is it better to provide it in a coordinated and integrated manner? And from our experience with our health plan and the research we've done and our observations of the healthcare market, not just in the country, but specifically in our state, we believe that the economies of scale and the negotiating power that we would get by adding these covered lives could help us to better manage costs, to lower that trend that is that is too high and that is what is worrisome to anyone who is involved in actively managing health care?
My corresponding question to that, and it, maybe you can or cannot answer it, is are we taking economies of scale away from the local areas? Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau would probably be the biggest, Kenai maybe, Mat-Su. If there's another part of that benefit, because this is looks like the teacher's retirement system for the most part, and so are they going to lose economies of scale?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, I think that's probably a better question for the districts to answer than for me to answer. I'm not aware that there is such fragmentation among the plans right now that it could be possible in some districts, but again, I think that's really something that is better for them to answer.
Yes, Chairman, that's the overall picture. If I was looking at it, and that is, I want the state to save money, and I'm working on understanding it. Thank you.
And help me. So, explain to me how ultimately the state is responsible. Anyways, there's perhaps left holding a bag of some sort, and how much the state is now subsidizing any of these health cares, if any?
Mr. Chairman, I think really this comes back to the issue of education funding, and the state is a significant portion of education funding, in some cases almost the totality of education funding. So I think from that standpoint, since the state is paying much of the bill with respect to the funding of education, then the state has an interest in how those costs are managed. That's sort of the near-term answer. The longer-term answer is that we inherit these employees as retirees into our plan. And it's very difficult to inherit a population at the point at which they are the most expensive, but to not have the ability to have some impact on the care and that they receive and the plans that they're under as their active employees, because it's really their health status during that time that they are active employees that is a huge determinant of the costs that we then pay on the back end when they're retirees. So from that standpoint, before this bill even came up, we've been having conversations about how could we better coordinate with districts, work with districts and municipalities, because we are paying those costs at the time at which these employees are the most expensive.
Senator Wilkowski, to continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm hearing a lot of conclusory statements that this will save money. However, there's been no analysis by you. The only analysis that I have is this document that I have from Local 71, where they say they provide coverage, health coverage, to about 2,000 public employees throughout Alaska. You say you've got 16,400 members in Alaska Care, so you have eight times the members they have. And what they're saying is for the current benefit year from July 2012 to June 2013, the school district paid $1,235 per employee per month to the Trust for Health Coverage, whereas the state of Alaska paid $1,330 per employee per month. And you have eight times the number of employees than Local 71 anyway, according to their data. If you have economies of scale right now, and yet you're not producing results. You're $1,000 more a year, and this would cost the Anchorage School District $400,000 more. We have this experiment. We've done this. We've tried this. I don't think this massive government takeover of health care, at least from the evidence that I'm seeing no support for it anywhere.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I would note that the health care that's being provided by the school districts are indeed part of government, and they're the ones that are currently providing the health care now. So it is an issue of which government entity is responsible for providing the care rather than a shift of the provision of care from the private sector to government. And I believe I already answered your question to the best of my ability. Without the definitive way to determine if we would save money would be if each of these entities that provide health care to these employees provided us with their claims data. Now, we don't suspect that that's going to happen. So what we can do and what we have done is looked at the pool of employees and the demographics of that pool and done and our actuary has done the best job that they can with the information they have of looking at the at that pool and what we could expect the experience of that pool to be. I think for you've given a specific example, and I think there are other districts that could give specific examples of costs that are $1,600 per month or more than that to cover cover employees. So for every, I think, example of a district that's paying or a health trust that's paying a lesser amount, I think there's probably an equal example, if not more in terms of volume on the other end, of districts that would save up to, you know, $400 per employee per month is what we've heard. So I think that's why if you get down and you start talking about individual plans, this conversation certainly makes a good soundbite, but perhaps does not really address the overall issue, which is, as a group, how could we best manage these costs?
Right. Okay. Are there any other testimony either of you would like to give at this time?
Mr. Chair, I can go over the three fiscal notes if the committee is interested.
Sure.
So let's start with the fiscal note that's labeled SB 90 DOA HPA 4513, the one that has the 100,000 in the FY14, 100 million in the FY14 column. To go through these fiscal notes, really have to understand the mechanics of the bill, which I can go over relatively quickly. So as the commissioner has testified, this bill contemplates roughly 47,000 covered lives coming into our existing active plan, which is a pool of 16,000. That's quadrupling the pool. When we do health insurance pooling, we like to have a reserve, a claim reserve, that consists of about 3 to 4 months worth of claims costs. So the 100 million is what we would need in order to establish a.
I think he needs a fiscal note.
I'm looking for fiscal notes, and I'm not seeing them, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Sorry. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the $100 million is what we would need to establish a claims reserve of 3 to 4 months of claims costs for the inbound 47,000 employees. How do we calculate that? I believe there's a document in the bill packet that suggests that in FY12, the aggregate costs of school district health insurance was about $282 million. Since this bill takes effect in FY15, we're just rounding that up to $300 million. Likelihood is it'll be more, but trying to make this easy to understand, round numbers. If $300 million in claims costs in FY15, 4 months of that is $100 million. It's important to have that reserve in place when the employees start coming in, because they're going to incur claims immediately. July 1st, somebody will incur claims. We need to be able to pay that. We have an existing claims cost reserve in the group health life benefits fund for our existing employees. We don't want to impair that unnecessarily.
I'm sorry, did you? So this, all right, so, but it shows here that it's going to be something like that every year.
No, the 100 million, the way it's shown right here is the bill allows us to draw from the public education fund up to 100 million over 10 years. For ease of reference, we've shown the draw all in the first year. The likelihood is we would draw over 2, 3, 4 years. Ultimately, what we want to get is a claims reserve for the entire pool of 63,000 covered lives of 3 to 4 months worth of claims. But we need a source in order to do that. The bill contemplates that source would be the public education fund. The bill has a payback provision, and the way it pays back is that we, the Department of Administration, will send a bill to each school district for their first 4 months of claims. That bill can be paid back over 10 years. We would collect that over 10 years, and we would just funnel it back to the public education fund to hold it harmless. That's the $10 million offsetting that goes across the rest of the fiscal note. We have receipt authority for $10 million to collect each year back from the school districts. Then we would move that into the public education fund. So as the bill is drafted right now, $100 million draw from the public education fund, and then after 10 years, $100 million back into the public education fund.
Thank you.
Okay. The second fiscal note is also labeled HPA for 05-13, and this is the one that has an appropriation of $237,700 in FY14. These are more of the nuts and bolts costs of administering the program. So in FY14, the $237,000 is to pay for upfront. Again, remember, folks won't come in until FY15, but we need to do some upfront staffing and communications and reprogramming of our computers, so that's what that covers. And then going across the 9.8 trending up to 13.1, those are the fees that we pay our contractors, our third-party administrator, pharmacy benefit manager, and the upward trend reflects the actuarial expectation of increased population for the school district employees. Dropping down to, just so it's clear, the payment of those fees will come out of our group health and life benefits fund, which is established in AS 3630095. That's where the existing benefit credit and premiums go into that we collect from the state and from employees to pay claims, health insurance claims, as well as to pay the cost of administering the program. The next line down is the miscellaneous of $315 million. That's composed of two parts. The biggest part is the $305 million, and that consists of the benefit credit that the state will bill to each school district for each employee. $1,389 per month per employee is our present estimate of what the benefit credit will be in the Alaska Care Active Plan in FY15. That's what we anticipate charging for our employees to participate in the economy level plan and the preventive dental plan. As you've heard from Senator Wilkowski, right now in FY13, that cost is $1,330. We're moving that forward to FY15. We get to $305 million by simply multiplying $1,389 per month per employee times 12 months times 18,300 employees. That adds up to $305 million. That's an estimate at this point, but our hope is, and as you can see, that 315 stays flat across the remainder of the fiscal note. Our hope is that through the increased benefit of scale that this bill contemplates, that we will be able to better manage health insurance costs for the short term. The remaining amount of the 315, that $10 million, is what we'll be collecting back from the school districts, what I referenced earlier, that $10 million per year payback. Any other questions on this note?
Questions? Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Do you have any proof that the state does a better job of maintaining costs, securing preferred contracts than most school districts already do, or most trust funds already do?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I think we had this discussion earlier in the session, and I think I agreed that union plans, school district plans, we all probably do an equal job in managing costs. I think the fundamental issue here is the school districts are approaching $300 million a year in healthcare spend. The state of Alaska is approaching $300 million a year in healthcare spend for its active population. The retiree plans are in excess of that. We have to get these costs under control. Scale is one way that can be done.
Would a healthcare exchange help get costs under control?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I do not know the answer to that question.
Is that something you've investigated at all? Isn't that a plan where people, groups, small businesses can pool their insurance together? Isn't that what a healthcare exchange does, which you've opposed?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, the issue of health insurance exchanges, federally sponsored, state sponsored, privately sponsored, has been extensively investigated. There's great debate whether it actually increases costs versus decreases costs. We could probably spend hours looking at the literature on whether they in fact increase or decrease costs.
Doesn't a healthcare exchange do exactly what you're proposing that we do, which is pull people together? Or am I wrong about that?
through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, there is an element of pooling to health insurance exchanges. The difference here, though, is that they're all going to be in one plan as opposed to bringing together a variety of different insurers. So there's a possibility that there's less scaling in the health insurance exchange than we have here.
Would the administration support a statewide health care exchange that allowed customers and trust funds to pool all their health care together?
I think I'm going to punt that to my board.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I mean, if you want us to take that question to the Department of Health and Social Services and the governor's office for a collective response, we'd be happy to do that. But we are not here today prepared to debate the merits of a statewide health insurance exchange. So I'm just simply going to say that if you'd like us to explore that further with them, we'd be happy to do that.
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Anything else, Mr. Barnes?
Yes, sir. We have one final fiscal note, and that's for the Division of Retirement and Benefits. In order to accommodate the administrative burdens imposed by an additional 47,000 covered lives, we're asking for 12 additional positions, and that's reflected in their 964,000. Those positions are to staff up the call center, to add an accountant, payroll tech, operations techs, and one appeals.
All right. Anything else? Can you stick around for a bit?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity.
Is there anyone else here from the administration?
No.
There's lots of folks, but we're the ones that are talking.
We're on the hot seat.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. I'm going to go to the people here in this room, although we have quite a few folks outside, and I'll get to you as quick as I can. Carl Rove? I used to see Carl a couple times a week for the last dozen or more years. I haven't seen you lately.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I've been trying to fly under the radar. That's why you haven't seen me so much.
But I thought you just didn't get to the back of the bus very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am here in support of Senate Bill 90. We have recently, every year we go through a resolutions process, and we have recently passed a resolution relating to health care costs and medical insurance. The effect of the recently passed federal health care or the Affordable Care Act is still yet to be fully realized. It isn't fully implemented until 2014, I believe. And so we are asking the governor, the legislature, and Congress to carefully review the legislation, identify the areas of unintended consequence or how we might be able to control some of the costs. We had no idea that this bill was going to be introduced, but it was our request for someone to take a look at what we might be able to do to control costs in the long term. I think when you ask this question about cost, we have data right now for a current day, what we have spent recently, what we spent today. We do not have the data. We just have projections and some experience of what costs are going to do into the future. We are experiencing escalated costs. We think that there is an opportunity to address some of those unanticipated costs. And I may add that if I have a little bit of latitude, we do have some experience at the School Board Association in pooling. It's not exactly related to medical and health, but back in 1986, because we could not get liability insurance across the state for rural schools, we started an insurance company, a pool, and we were going to market with a payment of about $1.25 per hundred in value. That's what the rate was back then, and that's an excessive cost, but that was all that was available to us, either that or to go bare. And I would share with you that through the years, to current day, after all these years of pooling, that rate has been dropped to 17 cents per hundred. Back then, we were only dealing in property loss, and today's program under the Alaska Public Insurance entity, we enjoy coverage in property casualty liability, workers' comp, auto, earthquake, flood, docks, etc. We have been able to address costs. We started out trying to contain costs in property, found out that we not only received benefit there, but we expanded to other lines of coverage, all with the idea of retaining dollars in municipalities and classrooms for local needs. And so that is a brief history of where we've come from with pooling. I'm not an expert on healthcare. I don't know where this will lead us, but I do know that the idea of pooling, taking more of a representative group to market, puts you in a better position to be able to negotiate better terms. You asked the previous testifiers if it were sooner, better sooner than later. I think our resolution speaks to the unintended consequence. We don't know what the full impact is going to be of the Affordable Care Act, but we know it's going to increase because the people who currently can afford insurance are going to pay for the people who can't. That spells increased costs somewhere into the future. We can't predict accurately what that's going to be. And so we're asking for opportunities to be able to look at this. And now I would say that my membership voted resolve behind this, and I speak confidently for this resolution. It was passed at our last November conference. There will be some of us, as I think the sponsor had mentioned, that may not agree with this piece of legislation based on their experience today. And I think your question, better sooner or later, I think sooner, to explore areas that we might be able to address the costs that we know are coming, that we know are coming. I think the time is now to start exploring that. So based on that, the resolution that we've passed, and this whole idea of a fragmented approach, 53 school districts out trying to provide coverage for each one of their groups, it takes some time, it takes some efforts. We are concerned that we may lose local control. We are about local control. On the other hand, we need to explore to see what kind of savings that we can experience into the future. And the question then would be, is local control what we are going to hang our hat on, or is it controlling costs into the future that may spiral out of control? So amongst my membership, we have concerns. This bill gives a lot of authority to the Department of Administration, the Commissioner of Administration, and we're concerned because we're not part of those conversations, but we are concerned with the bottom line costs and what it will be into the future. So with that, I think I'll end my testimony. I'll try to answer any questions you might have. All I can tell you right now is that we have all experienced increased medical costs, and we anticipate that going up into the future, and we're asking for the governor, the legislature, and Congress to examine the impact of the Affordable Care Act and what it's going to mean to local municipalities and school districts. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions, sir? Mr. Rose?
Thank you.
Yeah. Stick around for a little bit.
Sure.
We may have some more. Bruce?
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Bruce Johnson, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on behalf of the Alaska Council of School Administrators, and particularly one of our subgroups that's comprised of the superintendents. I think it's fair to say that a group of superintendents that came down early in the session proposed this idea, and we're very pleased that it's been picked up and being examined, and thankful to the Department of Administration and other legislators who assisted us with this effort. And the reason that they brought this to your attention, and it's referenced in our position statements, is that our benefit costs, particularly health insurance, are escalating at a rate that consuming large numbers of resources and really preventing us from putting money in the classroom where we best want to do that. At the same time, we're very concerned about the needs, health needs of employees. We don't want to minimize the importance of that, but anything that we can do, I believe our membership is behind to bring down those costs so we can redirect those funds. And the pooling that we've talked about, the larger pool, the 47,000 people that could come into a pool is significant, and that hopefully would drive costs down. I've heard some references to some of our small districts. They really don't have a choice, you know, when you and you're going to hear some testimony from some superintendents this afternoon, if they're still available, where they will give you an idea of some of those escalating costs and their inability to control that. They just have to take it because they're small. So with that, I'll end my testimony and hope that superintendents will pick up some of those details later.
Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know really much about this area, but and I don't know if you know anything, but is there something legally that prevents schools now from pooling their resources or school districts from pooling to get lower insurance rates?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, no, I don't think there would be anything to pool. We do have lots of partnerships out there. This is tied up in negotiated agreements and those sorts of things, which makes some of that difficult and perhaps prevents some of that from occurring. But I think most of our districts of any size at all have investigated all options for doing this in their individual districts, third party versus, you know, a strict insurance policy.
And Bruce, do you know from your superintendents that dealing with different classified employees who have different health programs is a significant issue for them?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I don't know that precisely. I have talked to a lot of them, and most of our districts are small, and so they simply have a single insurance opportunity in their district. They don't have multiple. I think it'll be a little bit easier, and we've had some superintendents and assistant superintendents talk about the value of a quality insurance, health insurance, in order to attract people to some of our most difficult districts to serve. And they want to keep that, and the fact that there's going to be, as I understand it, several potential policies, premium versus economy, for instance, they could still accomplish that, and I know that's important.
Any other questions for Bruce? Thank you, Bruce. All right. Those of you that are here from the bargaining unit 71, I would appreciate it, public employees, local 71, if one of you at least could come forward and give us your perspective now, and I want to circle around to a few other folks that are on the line, and then we'll come back to the other two. This is Tom Bryce, a dear friend. We served together in the House. Spent a lot of magic moments together.
Please, your hair Tom. Stayed the same color. Mine's fell out and turned gray. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would really defer to the folks in the Anchorage. They're the experts on the issue experts that can really speak in depth to what we're doing.
Which of those would you suggest?
I would suggest Dennis Moen. Is Debbie Hansen there as well? But I'd go with Dennis Moen and then Debbie Hansen.
I've got a Dina Moen.
Yeah, that's a misspelled. That's Dennis.
Okay. All right.
Well, let's hope. I don't think his health care package covers those types of services.
Which one of us do you think is in trouble?
Don't be so sure.
All right. Dennis Moen in Anchorage, can you hear us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Please excuse the confusion and identify yourself for the record and your affiliation and give us your testimony and hopefully answer some questions.
Absolutely. For the record, my name is Dennis Moen. I'm business manager for Public Employees Local 71 and sit on the chair of the Local 71 Medical Trust Fund. And I will get even with Tom Bryce. Anyway, what I'd like to talk to you about today is Local 71 and our trust fund that we have. And we do cover the Anchorage School District employees, about 350 of them. We do this at a savings, you know, compared to the state plan of about $400,000. We have different small groups. Just for the record, we do have a group in the municipality of Haynesboro of 47. We have Municipal of Anchorage, 35 folks, and 1,600 state employees. And I'm not opposed to the idea of pooling. Local 71 does pooling. We belong to a healthcare cost management corporation of about 50,000 in the state of Alaska and some other 30,000 outside of the state of Alaska. We do that. We do the health fairs. We work really hard to keep our costs down for the trust. One of the things I'd like to point out, besides the cost savings to the Anchorage School District and to the employees, is the level of care we can give, the level of attention. A lot of our folks in the school district, for them, English is a second language. We have people in our office in Anchorage that walk them through the process. We make sure they understand. We even have one person on staff that can speak in their native tongue to help them with some of the problems they run into. Again, I understand how pooling helps. We do that. I mean, there was conversations about Cordova, about Petersburg. We have members, state employees there. We have there, Kotzebue. We even have Kenai, Seward. We have one member in Fort Yukon. So I understand the economy of bringing people together. We run a really, I think, a great trust. We have, you know, generic drugs. We do preferred providers. We incentivize our folks. We look at every possible way we can to save money. And I think as far as 71 goes, and our Anchorage School District employees, I don't think it's a good idea to pull them out. I don't think they're going to get the level of service. I don't think there's going to be any cost savings. And I don't think they can bring them the level of service that we do. And a kind of a different note, and just because you lose that personal involvement when you start calling somebody in Zenith down in Seattle, this year we had, sadly, three critical incidents. Three times we had critical incidents with state employees. We were able to respond. We had grief managers, grief counselors there within, you know, a day to make sure our people were taken care of. You're not going to get that if you go through the state. It's just a big, cumbersome machine you're going to build that's not going to get you where you want to go. I think there's a way to bring those people together to economize, to get a better cost break, but I don't think just slamming everybody into one-size-fits-all is the right way to do it.
Dennis Dyson, is it fair to assume then that you and your members would prefer we did not do this?
That is absolutely absolutely true. We would prefer you did not.
All right. And my records here show that Billy Mears and Debbie Hansen are there with you. Is that true?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
All right. I'm hard of hearing, but I don't need to hear things repeated, but I'd be glad to have either or both of those folks testify if they have something to add to the conversation.
And I think what I'd like to do is have our trust administrator, and just for the record, we have a two-person office that takes care of about 5,500 employees and families. So Debbie is our trust administrator. She can explain to you some of the additional benefits we provide along with health care and some of the other things for our members.
All right. Thank you. Debbie, please come to the mic, and we're some time pressure, but we'd like to hear from you as succinctly as you can.
Yes, sir. Thank you. This is Debbie Hansen. I'm the trust administrator for Local 71. I've been here since 2005. I understand the pooling thought, too. It is a good thought for smaller areas, but I also know that there are other resources those areas can use, such as the Healthcare Cost Coalition. There are the superintendents might even want to look into that because it is a wonderful organization for pooling and getting together cost containment. My concern is losing the personal level that our membership experiences now. We have a very satisfied group, a satisfied membership, because they are taken care of. They are treated like we are their employees, because we are. And we make sure that we walk them through. And as I said, as Dennis mentioned to you, a large contingent of our custodian group, English is not their first language. And we make sure that they fully understand their benefits. They make proper benefit elections, because we take the time to do that with them. I would hate to see that lost to them, because they're involved in a larger pool with a very busy staff without that personal touch that they're used to having. It would make me sad to see that happen to them.
All right. Thank you. Going to go now to, I'm sorry, was there questions for either of those? Thank you. All right, I'm going to go to Kenai. Steve Atwater, Kenai School District, are you there, sir?
Yeah, Chair Dyson, I'm here.
Yeah, please identify yourself and give us your testimony.
Good afternoon. This is Steve Atwater. I am the superintendent of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. Thank you for taking my testimony. I'm calling today in support of SB 90. I believe that it will lead to savings for my district. As you know, my district and all districts in Alaska are looking to find savings. Kenai Peninsula Borough School District is self-insured for health care, and as such, does all that it can to contain costs. We have a wellness plan, have generic drugs, preferred providers, and take a conservative approach towards setting benefits, but we have not been able to slow the rising cost of health care for our employees. We have a little more than 1,200 employees, and with dependents, 3,400 total members in our plan. In 2008, our employees generated close to $12 million in claims. Last year, this amount was more than $21 million. This is a 62% increase in 4 years. In 2012, the cost per employee was $17,204 for a year, or by the month, $1,433. I believe that a statewide health insurance system for all school district employees will lead to savings in health care costs for my district. I'm convinced that the efficiencies that a larger pool of participants would offer must be embraced by the state. As it stands today, our known level of revenue for next year is $2.5 million less than the amount needed to maintain our current level of service for our students. Any savings that we can realize from healthcare could be used to support instruction for our children. At the district level, we have one full-time employee who is dedicated to our insurance plan.
Thank you. Any questions for Steve? Thanks you for waiting a long
day. Sorry, several other employees.
I'm sorry?
I'm sorry, I cut off. So we have one employee who's dedicated to health insurance at the district level, and several other employees who are also involved with insurance. Obviously, if we go to a statewide system, we would not need to maintain that employment. I encourage you guys to support SB 90.
Yeah, thank you. Any questions for Steve? Yeah, thanks for your service. Is it snowing there?
No, it's actually sunny.
Yeah. I hear it's snowing in Anchorage. All right. Thank you, sir. Let's see. I'm going to go to Jack Walsh in Bristol Bay. Are you still on, Jack?
Thank you, Chairman Dyson. Can you hear me okay?
Got you loud and clear, Jack.
I wanted to call in. Unlike Dr. Atwater, our school district is a much smaller district, and with only about 15 teachers and a total of about 30 employees, I regularly am faced with the increases in health costs, health insurance costs that are significant, and again, challenge me, and as they do other districts, to kind of meet those requirements. It turns out that, you know, we currently pay just about $1,700 per month per employee, and that cost has escalated in the 6 years I've been here at about a rate of about 10% a year. I will say that, you know, again, in what was a real anomaly last year was the first year in all my years of education where I ever actually had an insurance company tell me they weren't going to raise the rates, and they were held at zero. But I like Dr. Atwater and like other people that have spoke, recognize that, you know, I would much rather be investing my money in the instructional programs in the school, and protecting my employees' health and making sure that they have that kind of coverage is important, and yet I do believe that there could be some benefits to a greater pool. I did, you know, I don't want to repeat everything that everybody else said, but I do I want to be careful when Senator Dunleavy was speaking and mentioned how, you know, that we have a single TRS system and go into a single health system would be a smart thing. I'm not sure everybody would agree that that's a good parallel to make. But I would suggest that, you know, anything we could do to keep this cost down and have more money for instruction and for student learning, I think, would be really critical for this district and any other.
Any questions for Mr. Walsh? Are you still flying people across the river from South Naknek?
Yes, we are, Senator.
How many a day?
It's a very small number. This year it's so small that we started the year at about 3. We're now currently at about 7. And, you know, as a community and as a district, it's something that we are regularly struggling with. I've got my board meeting in South Naknek on Tuesday, and it's one of our annual discussions that makes people a little uncomfortable, but we're going to talk about it again this year.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate your work, sir. All right, now we're going to go to Dr. Rob Thomason in Petersburg. Are you online, Mr. Dr. Thomason?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you. Dr. Rob Thomason, superintendent of Petersburg School District and president of the Alaska Association of School Administrators, which represents the superintendent organization. Chair Dyson, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me this opportunity to talk with you about Senate Bill 90. On behalf of the Petersburg School District Board of Education and a majority of my Alaska superintendent colleagues, and we have met and talked this over in my role as their president, I support the provisions of Senate Bill 90. Healthcare is essential. No one debates that. Although essential, it shouldn't be the vehicle that drains scarce resources from the mission-critical function of educating kids. The majority of a school district's funding is achieved through state resources, the base student allocation being the largest contributor. So right now, the state is, in fact, paying a lot to insurance companies. Take it down to from the 30,000-foot level to the ground level, our district experience, we had the state plan in 2010-11. We were insured by Aetna. We were going to endure a 40% increase that year, which for us was $250,000. We thought that was untenable, so we started looking around. We ended up, we had lots of negotiations to talk about the time that it takes, and we ended up going with NEA Health Trust for significantly less, saved $200,000 over the previous year, so in fact, a net gain if we didn't have the increase of $450,000. So we've kept our pencil pretty sharp out here in Petersburg. Petersburg School District has one of the higher employee contribution rates at 20%. So any rate increases have a negative effect on the district and the employee. Our cost per employee is about $1,650 per employee, with the district paying 80%, the employee paying 20%. We have 68 covered employees and their families. So we're a small district, a little bigger than Jack Walsh there and smaller than Steve Atwater. And we have Plan E for the NEA Health Trust, which it goes A, B, C, D, E, F, G. So we're at one of the lower end plans. Of an $8 million budget, $1.3 million devoted to health insurance. Seems like an extraordinary amount to those of us here in Petersburg. Now with the NEA insurance, we did have a 0% increase last year, but we're facing 15% this coming year on a $1.3 million in premiums, or $195,000 for the same coverage. While we appreciate the customer service provided by the NEA Health Trust and employees are satisfied with their coverage, we all believe we must do something to control the substantive increasing costs in health insurance. It's difficult at the local level in a small district or a large district to fund this contractual cost increase and not consider possible staff reductions, particularly in the current fiscal environment.
Can you summarize, Dr.
Anything which can be done through economy of scale or increasing insurance pool size to control, maintain health insurance and care costs, health insurance and health care costs, and allocate those scarce funds to direct service support for youngsters, I think we are obligated to explore those options. Thanks for the opportunity to testify, and if there are any questions, I'll be happy to try to respond.
Thanks for your questions for Dr. Thomason. All right. Last one we have is, I believe it's also Dr. Dina Paramo and Matt Sue. Are you on, Dina?
Hello. My name is Dina Paramo. I'm the superintendent for the Matsuboro School District. I want to thank the Senate State Affairs Committee for allowing me to provide testimony on behalf of Senate Bill 90. The Matsuboro School District currently spends approximately $30 million on health insurance benefits each year out of its general operating fund. I want to remind you that 75% of our operating fund is directly paid for from the state. So in actuality, this bill just determines which public entity administers the benefits, not really a takeover, as was mentioned. Nevertheless, roughly 15% of all expenditures goes to our health insurance. With the average cost of health care increasing by approximately 12% annually, Matsuboro School District could experience a $3.6 million increase, the equivalent of 36 teaching positions. This year, health care in Matsu cost $1,702 per employee. The trend of increasing health costs is not new to Matsu or anywhere in the state. Over the past 10 years, health insurance costs have increased 131% in Matsu. It has become clear that we must lower the growth rate of our health care spent as our current path is unsustainable. For the purpose of today's testimony, I'd like to draw your attention to three key points. The first, including K-12 school districts as eligible participants in the statewide benefit plan would significantly increase the covered lives, spreading the risk over a much wider base, potentially saving all employees, the school districts, and the state money. Second, including more covered lives will significantly increase the negotiating power of the group with medical providers. Finally, centralizing the administration of benefits or benefit plans eliminate significant duplication of effort. The associated costs of administration and the burden of administration on all school districts while reducing the overall administrative cost per participant. MATSU desires to continue to offer the most competitive benefits we can for our employees for their health care insurance, but we cannot sustain the cost without using an economy of scale. Again, I want to thank the Senate State Affairs Committee for hearing testimony on this bill and giving public education due consideration. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you. Are there questions for Dina? Dina, I understand that you have mentored and trained Senator Dunleavy. Is that true?
Yes, Senator.
We need help. We can't get him to do what we want, so let us in on it. Thank you. All right. That's all the list I have people online. Is there any others? All right. So anyone else here in the room that wants to testify on this bill? All right. I'm going to set aside here. Please.
Good afternoon, Senator. My name is Willie Anderson. I am a staff employee of NE Alaska. It was our desire to have this bill held over until Monday so that we can have our trusts testify in this bill. We currently represent about 12 school districts around the state, two of whom you heard from today. And we would like to talk about the whole pooling system, and we would suggest that if we could have a hearing on Monday on this bill as opposed to closing out public testimony would be beneficial for us. So that's my request.
Yeah, and it's good to see you, Willie.
Nice seeing you, Senator.
It's my intention to move this bill on to finance, and that will be another opportunity for public hearing and so on and so forth. And that'll be available online for you to, you know, see when that'll happen and rally your troops. And if you want to get some written testimony to us, we'll pass that on with it to them.
There is a written testimony that was sent to your office today.
And it's in our packet, and thank you. Any questions for Willie? All right, thank you. So we're going to set this aside for a few minutes, and we'll go on with House Bill 186, which is a definition of police officers. Who's here to present?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name, for the record, is Ike Gilopsos. I am a staffer in the office of Representative Cherise Mellett. The representative sends her apology. She's running a little late because of a prior hearing that's occurring on the other side of the building, but she hopes to be here shortly. House Bill 186 is
on cue.
Perfect timing.
We heard the drum roll.
For the record, my name is Cherise Millett, representative for House District 24. The bill you have before you is House Bill 186. What it does is it defines a police officer, so all police officers are covered under the Alaska Police Standard Councils. So it would level the playing field. All police officers that carry a badge and carry a gun that work for a borough municipality would have minimal training that's approved by the Alaska Police Standard Councils. What we're seeing is with the definition of full-time in there, a lot of seasonal and part-time employees that don't have to be either certified or trained to Alaska standards that are coming into our police force. This causes great alarm for those communities that once they hire someone and realize that they either have a domestic violence charge or some other type of crime on their record, it's hard for them to get rid of them and find just cause because there wasn't a correct background check done, or if they have a case where they're collecting evidence and the evidence isn't collected properly, they don't have a certificate or a way of taking that police officer to task for his lack of expertise or inability to perform his duty. So all this bill does is take out a full-time employee, so it requires all police officers to go through minimum standard training through the Alaska Police Council standards.
Yeah, thank you. Any questions for the representative, Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, thank you. Any opposition to this? Have the police officers weighed in on this?
They have. Not one police department has come in negative. They're all very supportive of this. The police council standards are very supportive of this. Matter of fact, if you talk to some folks in Sitka, they've actually had this problem arise, and they're the ones that came to Jonathan Christ Tompkins and myself to see if that we could make that change. The Anchorage Police Department fully supports that. Mark Mew is on record testifying for the bill, as well as some other state troopers, and it has no unions have objected to it. It's a pretty straightforward bill. I think police officers all want to feel that when they carry a badge and a gun that they're all licensed to an expectation that the public is assured that their safety is first most in their minds.
Any other questions for the sponsor?
It's got a zero fiscal note, but it's going to require some more training, isn't it, for people?
Through the chair, it is Senator Wilkowski. However, the Alaska Police Standards covers those costs. As it is now, there's not a lot of people that fall under this area, but they have said that they will absorb the costs, and they have funds to do that with.
Based on what we've heard, are you going to be able to support it?
I think so. I mean, unless there's some negative public testimony.
I have Al Barrett in Fairbanks, Sheldon Smith in Sitka, and Mark Muse in Anchorage. We have some time constraints, and I'm sure all of you have more pleasant things to do. Are any of you against this bill? Please speak up.
Senator, this is Mark Muse in Anchorage. No, we support it wholeheartedly.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Mr. Schmidt and Sitka? Okay.
You hear me okay, Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, on behalf of Alaska Police Standards, we support this bill. Thank you very much.
And Al in Fairbanks?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I support it, but I was going to ask for a friendly amendment.
We're friendly. Go ahead.
That you would also add Title 16, 05.150, that's underneath the Fish and Game codes, Part 2 to be amended, and it's just one short sentence. It says, underneath the authority of enforcement, a police officer in the state, I'd like to see the amendment of the word in changed to of the state.
Is that in the current?
Where would?
Not in the current. It would be an addition, an additional amendment, you know, amendment to the bill with an, you know, added language. So, you know, there's also police officers involved in fish and game issues and enforcement.
Yeah.
Through the chair. It would be covered. They would be covered if they carry a badge or a gun. They would fall under the police Alaska Police Council standards, and they would be required for minimal. This is the only statute that would.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Could you hear that, Mr. Schmidt?
Mr. Barrett.
Oh, yeah. Yes, Mr. Chairman. What I'm looking for is so we would have a clear way of identifying that the authority of employees of Fish and Game and the peace officers of the state have the authority and not outside law enforcement issues, mainly, and you guys have been pretty familiar this session with federal oversight and federal agencies usurping their authority with our regulations.
Representative Millett, would you say it again so that Al can hear it?
Through the chair, I think what he's talking about is giving the authority to the, in addition to giving it to the state troopers, it would be given to the Fish and Game wildlife officers. So if there was federal overreach, they would have the same powers that a police officer or a state trooper would have. And I'm not sure that this bill is the proper place for that placement.
Al, because the state Fish and Game guys are all a part of the state troopers, and we've seen them switch back and forth between those roles, including the current Commissioner of Public Safety, there seems an opinion here that they would be covered. Well, we're just because of the time and where we're at in the in our process here, I don't think we have time to amend this and get it through on this during this session. So I'm sure the sponsor will look at that, and those of us, well, most of us are going to be here next year, in least in case somebody shoots us. And if we miss something important, we'll try to get it back. But we'll get a legal opinion to see. But for the record, I'd like to say that at least that we believe it's covered because they are part of the troopers and brown shirts instead of blue shirts. But thank you for testimony, and thanks for bringing that to our attention. Any of the three of you want to add anything else?
Not, Senator and committee members, not unless you have any questions for me. I'm fine. Thank you.
Representative Paulette.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to point out today is a sad day for the troopers. Officer Mew is currently attending the funeral of the two troopers that passed away in the helicopter crash, so I really appreciate him being here on such a sad day and testifying for this bill. So it's, you know, with a heavy heart, I think the officers are all on the phone today.
Yeah, thank you. I have a heavy heart on that one as well. All right. Anyone else want to testify on this bill? Is there comments or questions from the committee?
Ready to move the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Go.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move House Bill 186 out of committee with individual recommendation and the attached zero fiscal note.
Objection? Seeing none, pass. We're off the record for a minute.
Thank you,
Mr.
On the record, we're taking up HB 59, Missing Vulnerable Adult Response Plan. Representative Max, as a personal courtesy, I would enjoy your making this as brief and succinct as you can. We got some other things. I suspect your bill will pass with no problem.
We've heard it already.
Thank you.
Yeah, we have. Oh, I know. That's right. You've got an amendment you want us to make.
Yes, please.
All right, please.
This is very similar to Senate Bill 36. The only difference is that we added back in the tort immunity for law enforcement agencies, et cetera, on page 2, lines 22 through 29. By the way, I'm Max Grunberg. I represent Boniface in Senator Wilkowski's district, and this is Miles Brooks, my assistant. And so that's the only difference with the Senate bill. There is one thing. Where's the? Show me glasses. There is one thing that I would like to have added from the Senate bill that is not in the House bill, and that has been given to the chair, and it is a phrase on line 23, page 2. It adds a person or a group. I think that's a good catch, and I'd be happy to carry that back for concurrence. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So you want us to move this amendment? Would you do that, Mr. Coghill?
Sure. This would be amendment number one to House Bill 59, right?
Correct.
All right. Mr. Chairman, I'll move amendment number one.
Is there objection? Seeing no objection, amendment number one is accepted. Is there anything else you wanted us to do?
Thank you.
All right. The chair would entertain a move.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. I'll move CS for House Bill 59, State Affairs, amended, as amended from committee with its attached fiscal note. I think there's...
Is there objection? Seeing none, moved.
Zero.
Right, under bills previously heard, I want to take up the drone aircraft one. What number is that one?
HCR-6.
Sorry?
I need to call Representative Hughes.
She was just here.
Actually.
Trying to catch up with you. Yes.
take up House Bill 113. That's the Fire Standards Council related to the membership. We've heard this, but please, would you quickly summarize for us?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Michael, for the record, Michael Pascal, staff to Representative Feige. Essentially, this bill is changing the composition of the Fire Standards Council by having all three of the statewide fire organization representatives on the council. Currently, there's only one of those members, and in doing this process, we're adding one member to the council as well. So the council will now have 12 members. The bill was drafted at the request of the Fire Standards Council and is supported by all three of the organizations that represent the fire service in the state. There was one question about the fiscal note during the last meeting, and I have spoken with the administrator from the Department of Public Safety, and the Fire Standards Council and its programs received $250,000 in general funds appropriations, and then has another $250,000 as part of their fund receipts that for providing these programs, and it is his opinion that they have sufficient funds to absorb the additional cost of having the one additional member on the Fire Standards Council, and concurs with the House Finance Committee's zeroing of the fiscal note for the bill.
Thank you. Are there questions for the sponsor's office? Mr. Pascal. I keep wanting to say Pascal, and it's Pascal, right?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I'm ready to move the bill, please, after the explanation of the zero fiscal note. So, Mr. Chairman, I move that we move House Bill 113 from committee with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, House Bill 113 passes. It will take a brief at ease, and we'll get back. Resolution 6, sorry, back on the record, we're on House Concurrent Resolution 6, unmanned aircraft, was bill previously heard. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We're back with you today. We do have an updated fiscal note. Would you like me to review anything about the bill, the resolution itself, or?
Just the fiscal note.
That was
okay.
The question.
The fiscal note is now, was redone, and it's now indeterminate. And there, on the second page there, it does explain that it is believed that it could be the expense for what would probably be one meeting a year for 2 years would be absorbed by the various departments of the commissioners that would serve on that. And the private industry members have indicated that they would absorb that as well, and the thought is that the meeting would be in Anchorage. So that is, we did discuss that with Senator Giesel yesterday and this morning, and that was her concern, so.
All right.
So with an indeterminate fiscal note, Mr. Chairman, does that go to finance?
I don't know. Does it have a referral to science?
It doesn't at this point, but it had a zero fiscal note before, so it wasn't, so it may need to be.
Yeah, I think it's going to have to, and yep. I think they need to look that over, so.
Yep.
I'd be glad to move it up there.
All right, let's do it.
So,
is that any problem? No.
All right. So that, Mr. Chairman, I'll move the CS for House Concurrent Resolution Number 16, EDT, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached indeterminate fiscal note.
Any objection? Seeing none, it passes. Anybody here from Senator Olson's office?
Yes.
All right. This is Senate Bill 48.
This before us?
Yeah.
We got a new draft, huh?
All right. We're back on the record. Senate Bill 48 under brief bills previously heard. What has happened is had extensive conversations with Mr. Barnhill, and I have personally come to the conclusion he's probably right, which almost always happens. And what we're going to present to you before the committee today is a committee substitute which mirrors the language of the bill in the House. And what that does is bring the date for the in essence, the reference date up from, brings it up to 2010. I'll get that explained to you,
Mr. Chairman. Why don't I go ahead and move the move the committee substitute that we have before us? That is the new version for Senate Bill 48, and it's the LS0444/U version, dated 4/5/13.
All right. Is there somebody here from the sponsor's office, please? All right, would you explain the amendment, or can you?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, David Scott, staff to Senate Rules, and I believe I can. What they did was for those communities who have lost more than 25% of their population between the two decennial censuses in 2000 and 2010, those communities, they'll move the floor from the 2008 floor to the 2012 floor. Basically, it's current, their current employees, so that the 2008 floor doesn't affect them, those communities anymore.
And that mirrors the language that's in the House version?
Mr. Chairman, that is my understanding. That is.
And mine as well. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. How many municipalities does this apply to, roughly?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, three that I know of.
And
there are, and just for the record, so the records show you, sorry to interrupt, Senator Wilkowski, there are communities that have, there are more than three communities who have lost 25% of their population between that time, but they did not have any PERS employees, so they're unaffected.
Senator Wilkowski,
does this have the impact of waiving basically the fees and expenses for these three communities?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, that's not my understanding. It's my understanding that they still have that bill.
Okay.
To the PERS system.
Mr. Barnhill, join us, please.
Mike Barnhill, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Administration. Do you want me to field that pending question?
Yes, sir.
So there is a retroactive date in the bill and a reduction of the rate of interest to Federal Reserve rate plus 3%.
So if I could, Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to figure out what exactly the bill does. So there's three communities. I'm assuming Galena's one.
Galena, Pelican, and Atka, I believe.
And they owed a couple million dollars, a few million dollars, was it?
Oh, I don't think it's that much.
This is David Scott, the chair. I know Galena's is pushing $500,000.
Okay.
The other two, I'm not aware.
And this would roll that back by how much? Any sense?
That's a good question. Through the chair, I don't know how much it would roll it back by. It could, so you bring the floor to 2012, so they would pay based on their existing. It may get rid of it almost entirely, but I haven't run the numbers.
Okay. All right, so any other questions or comments?
I think, Mr. Chairman, comment is, It sounds like these communities are under duress, and so it's a pretty narrow scope version. So probably we pass it under duress too, but I'd rather have us do it under duress than them have to live under the duress. So
it's going to get worse.
Yeah, it's just going to get worse.
The hole is getting deeper. Greg Moyer and Galena, are you on, Greg?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Greg, you testified before. Is there anything in addition that you'd like to say?
Nothing new, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I think you've heard me testify. I'm important, of course, to these communities, especially Galena, as we try to come out of this hole that you mentioned. Just working on the budget as I'm listening to you folks, and this would be a it would bring us up to where we can where we are now, which is about half of what the 2008 salary for.
Yeah, all right. And how much will it save you guys?
Roughly. Well, Mr. Chairman, if it's retroactive to that, I mean, we're right at that amount now with our PERS, and we continue to give our contributions as we should, and it may, since we were above this line for some, it may retroactively take this completely out.
All right. This committee would enjoy kind of an update or report from you after the first of the year of just practically how it's worked out. But thank you for your interest in helping us. Any other questions or comments? All right. Chair, I'll entertain a motion.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass out of committee Senate Bill 48 as this new version, which is the LS44U version from committee with attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection? Seeing none, it is passed out. I just got a note saying that the folks at LBNA are still engaged, but they believe they'll be here 6:15. Is there any bills else that we've heard? Previously heard we could or should deal with. All right, we're going to stand at ease until 6:15. For the record, Senator Giesel has joined us. Probably didn't say that she'd been gone for a little over an hour. It's Senator Stedman. So the remaining issue before us is Senate Bill 90. We've had extensive hearings. Quite a few people around the state. The representative of the school boards says that that organization is in favor. The representative of the superintendents, administrators, said similarly, and we learned that the impetus for this came from the school administrators. And so, anyways, Senator Dunleavy, summarize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, health. As a former school board member, as a former school board president of the second largest school district in the state of Alaska and the fastest growing, also as a former superintendent, health care is not something we look forward to at the local level to negotiate, to wonder how we're going to get funds to pay for it, to wonder what it's going to be next year in terms of an escalating cost. It's not something school officials look forward to having to deal with. As you heard, I would say the vast majority of school officials, quite honestly, would not like to have to deal with this. But if they're going to have to deal with it, the state's going to have to help pay the bill. The 53 school districts are actually an extension of the state of Alaska. Education throughout the history of Alaska has gone through many different variations from SOS, or even before that, territorial days, to SOS, state-operated schools, to now we have 53 school districts. But nonetheless, they depend upon state money, especially if they're an REAA. That's 100% state money. When you look at your municipalities, it's a little different. But in the end, the vast majority of money comes from the state. We give these folks at the local level the money primarily to run an educational program to benefit kids. Health insurance, salary, and other issues such as that, they are part of the administration of a school district, but it's not something that school officials necessarily look forward to keeping or having to deal with. So with that said, if this bill passes, I think in the end it will be less expensive for the state, I think it will be better for the school districts, and I think it will be better for school officials so they can focus on school policy issues, in other words, student learning, instead of having to deal with a contentious issue during negotiations and having to worry where their funds are going to come to pay for an escalating cost that they have no control over. This way, if it's brought into the state, there's more control, and it's off their laps. They can focus on kids. So I would ask that you pass this bill out of your committee.
Any questions for Senator Dunleavy? Senator Coghill.
Rather than do it during the comment time, I'll just say this to the senator. The thing that I would ask you to watch for, because I want this to go on up to finance, because I think there are those questions there, but the input from local districts on the unique challenges and the service capacity in those communities is just, it's just so different across the state. And I hope that as you go forward on this, that you look for ways to mechanize that, where that kind of input is brought in. That's all.
I had asked Senator Wilkowski, who has some good questions, to kind of summarize his issues with this bill. Please.
I actually have an amendment, Mr. Chair.
Sorry?
I have an amendment.
Okay.
It's a conceptual amendment. Since I didn't think the bill's going to move today, it's conceptual. I'd move conceptual amendment number one.
I'll object so we can hear it.
Oh. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, this is an amendment from a bill that was run last year, and it was, it's a, again, conceptual amendment, only because there may be some technical drafting changes that need to be made. It creates a healthcare exchange for the state of Alaska. And I think this will go a long way towards doing exactly what we're trying to do here. This will give consumers, individuals in Alaska, the opportunity to pull their resources. This will give small businesses the opportunity to pull their resources. This will give trust funds the opportunity to pull their resources. And it will lower the price of insurance all throughout the state of Alaska. And so I would appreciate your support for this conceptual amendment. I'm sure it can be polished up in the next committee, or if you would like, we can have several days more of hearings on it to discuss it.
I appreciate that. Questions or comments from the committee?
The healthcare exchange has been debated, and I think, you know, the difference between the healthcare exchange as proposed in here is to fragment the population and then recongregate them under a whole different system. And I think what we're trying to do is say we already have a fragmented system that is government employee based. And so the competition really is the ability to go out and compete in larger areas. And so I understand the healthcare exchange benefit. It doesn't fit well in Alaska generally, and it certainly, I don't think, fits in this bill, so I'll speak against it.
Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also speak against the amendment. The Alaska Healthcare Commission took a look at this. The Commissioner of Health evaluated the cost of instituting exchange in Alaska. It was cost prohibitive and found to be not beneficial for Alaska. So I would oppose the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is the
Chairman
objection maintained?
Only, I'll maintain the objection, but I want to give him credit, the maker of the amendment, credit. I thought that was a very good idea to bring to the debate. And I like the idea of having competition. So those two things I like about it, but I still will maintain my objection.
All right. Call the roll, please.
Senator Giesel?
No.
Senator Schockel?
No.
Senator Steadman? Senator Wilikowski?
Yes.
Senator Dyson?
No. All right. Amendment 1 fails. For the benefit of Senator Giesel and Wilikowski, I was talking with the administration during our break. And if indeed, with further examination, we decided this was not a good thing to do, the department will be starting to staff up and so on and so forth. But they probably will only have spent a couple $100,000 by the time we get back here. And the major expenses will start when the enrollment period starts, and that will build over 5 years probably. So if we are making a mistake in our haste here, there is recovery. We can all contribute the amount out of our office accounts, make up for our mistake.
I won't, Mr. Chair.
And I'm not committing. Cannot commit my colleagues. All right. Any further questions or discussion?
Well, I would object to moving the bill if there's been a motion to move it, Mr. Chair.
There has
no, but I'll go ahead so that you can object to it. So I'll move that we move Senate Bill 90 out of committee with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal notes.
There is an objection.
Yeah, and if I could speak to my objection, sure. Mr. Chair, and. You know, certainly sympathetic to the issue of high insurance costs that exist throughout Alaska. I'm also sympathetic to the idea that we have a legislative process and we have a committee process that is supposed to look pretty deeply into these issues. This is second to oil tax is probably one of the largest bills that I've ever had an opportunity to vote on, of course, outside the budgets. We're voting on a bill that's been before us. We've had testimony on it for probably less than an hour. It's got a fiscal note of roughly $1.5 billion. I know it's not all GF, Mr. Chair, but this is an enormous change in public policy in the state of Alaska. This is a bill that will affect the lives of 40,000 Alaskans, according to the testimony of the Commissioner of Administration. This is taking away local control from local communities. It's a bill that forces one set of standards, one insurance policy on every community in the state. I've asked the witness from the state, the Department of Administration, is there any evidence that the state does this better? And I was provided with none. I'm aware of none. We're aware of none. I asked whether or not the state can do it cheaper. And there's no evidence at all, Mr. Chair. None. Zero. In fact, the only evidence we have is presented by Local 71, which shows that in my district of Anchorage, this will increase the cost for my constituents by $1,000 a year, over $1,000 a year, and it will increase the cost of the constituents in my school district by over $400,000 a year. I don't know what the rush is, Mr. Chair. I really don't. This is a bill that's $1.5 billion of state funds, and I just simply don't understand why we're moving it in a time when we've had a hearing of about 45 minutes. It creates a dozen new state positions. There's no evidence it will save a penny. In fact, the evidence shows it'll cost us more. It will affect tens of thousands of Alaskans. I can't support this. This isn't how government is supposed to work, Mr. Chair. We're not supposed to move bills of this magnitude in 45 minutes without any information supporting such a bill, supporting such a policy shift. This is a radical, radical policy shift. This is a massive state government takeover of private insurance programs, Mr. Chair. I can't support it. I can't support moving it. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you. I'm sympathetic to several of the issues you raise. Any other questions, comments? Anything you'd like to say, Senator Dunleavy?
Again, just briefly, insurance is a burden for the local school districts to administer. It's something they do. I won't go into the history of insurance coming in on the heels or during World War II and why it came, et cetera, and I think everyone wants a great insurance plan. But again, the school district's primary purpose is to educate kids, not administer insurance plans, not negotiate over insurance plans, not find insurance plans, not figure out how to get money for insurance plans, not figure out ways to contain costs in insurance plans. That's not what they're there for. They're there to educate kids and set policy at the local level for educational policies. Insurance is a burden at the local level for local folks to administer. And you heard superintendents talk, folks on the front lines that have to administer it. You've heard the representatives of the groups for the School Boards Association and the administrators of the state of Alaska. They don't want to administer insurance. It's a burden. Take it off their backs, let them focus on kids, let them focus on programs, let them focus on instruction. And that's what you'll do by moving this bill.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Willikowski.
If we're back into argument here. I guess I would have a question to the bill sponsor, and that is the empirical evidence shows that the cheapest way to do insurance is single payer. If we had the Department of Administration conducting an analysis of a single payer system that was run by the state of Alaska and that showed that it was substantially cheaper, would you support legislation to that effect?
That's a hypothetical that I don't have the evidence in front of me to be able to make a decision. I would say this. As an administrator that was on the front lines, as a school board member, as a school board president, and now as a senator, and looking at the costs, looking at what could actually be dealt with at the local level, I don't want to have to deal with insurance at the local level. I don't want to have to deal with it. I have to currently, but I would hope that I wouldn't have to in the future so I could focus on kids. That's the best answer I can give you without doing the math and spending some time doing it.
I think you both raised good points. Senator Dunleavy's in the unfortunate position of Senator Coghill's attitude here is deteriorating exponentially, and we need to get him out of here. So,
have you moved the bill?
No, Mr. Chairman. Yes. I did move. I did make the motion with the individual recommendations.
And the objection is maintained?
Yes.
I call the roll, please.
Senator Stedman? Senator Coghill?
Yes.
Senator Willikowski?
No.
Diesel?
Yes.
Yes. All right. SB 90 has moved out with individual recommendations and significant fiscal notes, and it will be up in finance. We're adjourned.